Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Peter Singer, professor of bioethics at Princeton, is probably best known for his book Animal Liberation, which helped launch the animal rights movement in the 1970s. He has advocated highly controversial positions over the years, including the idea that the interests of humans should not be held above those of other animals necessarily, and that the euthanasia of severely disabled infants may be justified in some cases. Dr. Singer has a new book out now, which has a much less controversial premise on its face, but its central argument that extreme poverty could be eradicated if we only acted ethically may be just as radical. The book is called The Life You Can Save, Acting Now to End World Poverty, and Peter Singer joins me now to talk about it. Dr. Singer, always a pleasure. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be back with you.
Your book starts by making the case for why we should be giving more. But first, do you really think extreme poverty can be eradicated?
I'm sure there'll always be some extremely poor people in some countries. There may be repressive governments. There may be civil wars. There may be a flood or a drought. And climate change could contribute to as well. But I think there doesn't have to be a permanent population of a billion people living in extreme poverty. I think we could really reduce it to those kinds of pockets of particular circumstances that I mentioned.
And on the why, or I should ask really first on the how, is your book aimed primarily at individuals rather than policymakers?
It is, at least individuals in countries like the United States, where government aid has not been very effective. It's been politically influenced, so it's not been targeted at the poorest countries. It's also not very much compared to what other industrialized countries give in proportion to their income. So I think we have the opportunity to really make a difference, to find effective non-profit agencies and to donate through them. And I would like individuals to feel that they have the power to make the difference.
So, for example, in the book, you work your way through the most common reasons people give for not giving and your responses to them. For example, you contest the argument that as Americans, we already give plenty in foreign aid via our taxes. What's wrong with that argument, in your opinion?
Well, it just isn't true. The United States gives almost the least of any industrialized country in proportion to its income. Americans seem to have this myth that we give a lot, and it's quite extraordinary some of the responses you get when Americans are asked about what they think about foreign aid. A lot of them think that we do give too much. But then you say, so how much of the federal budget do you think should the government be spending on foreign aid? And their answers tend to float around like 5%, they say, or 10% of the federal budget. Well, in fact, we give not more than 1% of the federal budget in foreign aid. So on the one hand, they're saying, oh, we give too much. And on the other hand, when you say, how much should we give, they name a figure that's between 5 and 10 times as much as what we're really giving.
And so part of your book is a how-to guide for giving effectively. For example, you provide a formula for how much you think people should give based on their incomes. What is the formula and how did you devise it?
Well, I was looking for amounts that would be realistic, that we could really ask people to give without feeling that they were making some enormous sacrifice, but that if everyone or most people gave would be more than enough to meet the estimate that the Columbia University economist Jeffrey Sachs made of how much it would take to meet the Millennium Development Goals, which include halving the proportion of the world's people living in extreme poverty. So I really just played around with some figures, and I came up with figures that showed that if 90% of American taxpayers gave only 1% of their income, and then those in the top 10% of American taxpayers, that means earning $105,000 and above, would give more by a progressive step. So, you know, first 5% if you're in the top 10%, but not the top 5%, then 10% of your income if you're in the top 5%, and so on. I calculated that that would provide actually several times as much as Sachs thinks is needed, at least several times what America's share of that would be. And I was impressed by that figure, which really suggests that, you know, we could do an immense amount without making big sacrifices for ourselves. And I think if more people realized that, perhaps more people would be ready to put their hands up and say, fine, I'm willing to do that. Let's see if others will do it.
And we can take some phone calls for Peter Singer. Is he making you feel motivated here? Is he making you feel guilty here? Is he making you feel resentful here? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Remember, this is coming not from a development expert, but from a renowned ethicist. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, you know, another reason that people have for not giving, and I know that you push back on this one in the book, is that philanthropy undermines political change or even fosters dependency. I mean, there was a piece on the station, I think it was on Morning Edition, just yesterday or today, about whether aid to Africa actually helps the continent or hurts the continent. And, you know, there's a lot of that debate in policy circles. And I think that paralyzes a lot of people, thinking that their money is going to go into the hands of dictatorships, corrupt officials, that kind of thing.
Yes, and it's good that we talk about that. But again, I think, as you're saying, it is disempowering. I think the most recent debate has come from the publication of a book called Dead Aid by Dambisa Moyo, a Zambian. And previously there was similar debate about William Easterly's book, White Man's Burden. But if you look at both of those books, in fact, the authors explicitly state in the opening pages that they're talking about government aid and aid that comes from governments through organizations like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. They exempt from their criticisms the non-government agencies. And I think that the non-government agencies are more effective. We can give to Oxfam America or Save the Children or Doctors Without Borders or many other organizations. I list a number of them in the book, and I've also set up a website, thelifeyoucansave.com, where people can go and look at some of these organizations. My view of them, having done some research into them, is that they are generally much more effective, that the money doesn't create dependence, that it goes to the grassroots organizations and helps them basically get a chance to earn their own income and live sustainably.
Peter Singer, my guest on WNYC, his new book, The Life You Can Save, Acting Now to End World Poverty. And Sam in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
The comment I have is, if you were to take the top 5% of the income earners in the United States and you would tell them that they should give 10% to foreign aid, what should they be giving to help local charities to prevent poverty in the United States? Like, why? I'm not saying that people shouldn't. I'm a big proponent of charity. As a matter of fact, I myself am a fundraiser, so I understand it very well. But I'm just trying to understand if 10% of someone that's making $250,000 is going to be going to foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
How do you say how much they should be giving to prevent?
Right, what we see around us, the needs that we see around us, Dr. Singer, in our own communities.
Well, I accept that there are needs in our own communities, and you know, we and our government should be doing a lot about that too. But I support giving to the world's poorest people just because the money can go so far. There are things you can do for $50, for example. The Fred Hollows Foundation can pay for an operation done by volunteer surgeons that removes cataracts and restores sight in someone who's blind. Now, you know, for $50, you can't put your face inside a doctor's office in this country. You certainly can't restore the sight of someone who's blind. For $450, you can repair an obstetric fistula, which can ruin the life of a young girl for the rest of her life. She becomes a social outcast because of that condition. You know, the poor in this country, they should be helped, undoubtedly, but it's much more expensive. It's going to take thousands of dollars, really, to help them get back on their feet. And that's why I think we want to make our dollars go as far as we can in reducing poverty and the human suffering that it involves.
Esty in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Esty.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm not familiar with all of Mr. Singer's things, but today's idea of giving a percentage of our incomes is an old idea. How do you pronounce it? Tithing?
Tithing.
Tithing, that's right.
Giving,
tithing.
Which was once upon a time giving 10% of your income to the church, which was supposed to represent the community.
Well, I'm not part of the church. I'm an Orthodox Jew, and we always tithe, and we give it to the poor organizations and poor members of any of our community and outside of our community. It's just something that we've grown up with, that we raise our children with, and it's not on our place to judge why the people are not more self-sufficient.
Interesting. Esty, thank you very much for that perspective. And I wonder, Dr. Singer, if you think that there are pockets of American society or Western society where there is the most giving. Is it typical in certain religious communities like Orthodox Judaism, if Esty is representative, or anything else?
Well, Esty is certainly right that there is a widespread religious tradition of giving to the poor in Judaism, in Islam, and in Christianity in particular. I encourage and support that. I think very often the tradition has decayed and not been followed. That's certainly true of many Christian churches. Also, it often does go to the church and pays for the upkeep of the church and the salaries of those working there, and generally only a small proportion of it, at least in some Christian communities, will go to the poor. In addition, the point that I was making before is that I think that our money goes further when we send it outside our community, if we're Americans, because of the poverty there. So yes, I recognize there are these traditions. I should also say there are a lot of secular people who give substantially. Your listeners might like to look at a website called Bolder Giving, B-O-L-D-E-R, giving.org, which chronicles many people, some religious, some non-religious, who give up to 50% of their income. It's quite amazing what some people give.
We've got about a minute left. One commenter on our webpage says, I wonder what your guest thinks about microcredit. If everyone in America just put $25 into something like Kiva.org, it could be an enormous help, and they could get their money back if they wanted after the loan is repaid. I assume you're a big fan of microcredit?
I am a fan of microcredit. It's definitely a good thing to support, but don't think that it's going to solve all of world poverty. Not everybody is entrepreneurial enough to take that $25 loan and build it into a business, or maybe they're just not living in circumstances where that's even feasible.
And you also, in the book, do try to empower people to evaluate a charity so they can decide, you know, feel better about actually giving the money because they'll have confidence that it's going to be spent well. You want to just give us literally 10 seconds on how to start that process?
Yes. Go to my website, thelifeyoucansave.net, and take a look at the links there. They help you to evaluate some of the organizations that you might consider giving to.
TheLifeYouCanSave.net. The book is called...
TheLifeYouCanSave.com.
.com. And the book is called The Life You Can Save, Acting Now to End World Poverty. Peter Singer, the Princeton ethicist, is the author. And if you want to hear more, Peter Singer will be appearing at the Brooklyn Academy of Music tomorrow. That's Wednesday night, March 18th at 7:30. He'll be answering questions after a showing of the documentary Examined Life, which profiles Dr. Singer and others. You can find more information about tickets to that event at BAM.org. And Peter Singer, again, thank you very much for coming on and talking about
this
crucial topic.
Thanks,
Brian. It's been great talking to you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.